We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider, presented by Crumley Roberts. Visit CrumleyRoberts.com today to find out how they can stand up for you.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And for the entire month of May, which is rapidly coming to a close, we are presented by Crumley Roberts. Visit CrumleyRoberts.com today. Find out how they can stand up for you. Adam, it is our only show of the week. Memorial Day weekend coming up. Turn around. It's Tuesday. What's up?
I'm a little sad that it's our only show of the week, but you know how I am, where I never want to do any pods.
Right, yeah. I'm always like, Adam, let's do more pods. And Adam's like, I want to do less pods. And I'm like, no, let's do more pods.
Jones had this idea where we could do a pod every day this week in honor of Memorial Day, and I shot that down. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to participate in that. I said, let's cut it back to just one. And in reality, this may be the last pod until football season. It might be the last one until like mid-late August.
Well, you know, don't worry. You know Adam's joking about that.
Am I?
We've got potty nominations coming up. We have...
Not on this show.
No, not today. We have the potties themselves. We have the annual AMA. I think we may have said that next, like last year, I think we said on 4th of July, we were always going to do a movie.
I do think I remember that that you say it.
Maybe that'll come up in a little bit. Do we just stand true to our word? Who knows? We'll wait and see. Here's what I will give you my word of. We've got a big time show, Adam. We'll talk a little Tar Heels. Adam has a list. I went out on a limb and guessed that. We had not talked about that in the pre-production meeting. Since it's our only show of the week, I'm going to give Adam a 5-second challenge that he's going to try and tackle. We'll get you set for the ACC baseball tournament, the NCAA lacrosse Final Fours, get you up to date on the dates and opponents for all that. Plus, Adam, what a guest. Bill Raftery, broadcasting legend, former head coach at Seton Hall. And we dive into the weeds with Bill Raftery, talking about his career, catchphrases, and most importantly, just how classy Jim Nantz is.
Oh, dive into the weeds. I thought we were having Bill Walton, too. I really like Bill Raftery, and I feel like he's kind of an extended Carolina family member.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he tells some great stories about
the Tar Heels.
Yeah, about Frank McGuire and about Coach Smith and all kinds of fun stuff. So I think you will really enjoy that. It's hard. it's hard to listen to Bill Raftery and not enjoy it. He's just somebody that'd be, it just feels like he'd be fun to hang out with.
Which is what you're going to do later on in this show, just hang out with him.
Yeah, that's right. So, all of that coming up, a reminder that we are brought to you by LS Tractor. Don't let your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel game action. Let LS Tractor make short work of them. That's normal yard maintenance to larger projects. LS Tractor has the machine for you. The website. What is the website to learn more, you're saying to yourself? It's lstractorusa.com. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? That made me, when I said USA, made me think about Lee Greenwood and God Bless the USA.
You'll probably be hearing that this weekend.
Bless the USA.
Just like that.
Yeah, I still get a little teary-eyed every now and then when that comes on the radio. Or I get little goosebumps.
Well, if you can combine that with some fireworks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's a solid combination.
Next to you, Wendy Fenner still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the U.S.
You know what, Adam? Let's just go ahead and we're going to call this our Champions Watch. We're going to get everybody set for what's coming up this week as far as the Tar Heels are concerned. And it's brought to you by UNC Health, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. See the lineup for UNC Health at unchealthcare.org/sports. Adam, let's first start with the two lacrosses, moving on to the national semifinals. But Adam, it was not easy for either team. The women, of course, have been dominant all year, but they've really been pushed in both their games in the NCAA tournament. Defeated James Madison in the first round, and then going against Stony Brook in round two. Tar Heels were down 11-9 with about 9-10 minutes left, and then scored the final five goals of the game and won it. But Adam, fair to say that it was a little dicey.
Stony Brook played very well. Their goalkeeper was tough, but eventually too much Katie Hogue and Jamie Ortega.
Yeah.
A couple connections from them in the last few minutes of the game. But it was a tough one. And as we talked about last week, these tough ones are wearing on me a little bit.
Yeah.
It's one thing when you only have to endure football and basketball every year, but now when you're getting all stressed out for all these events, and there's even more that we're going to talk about, it's just emotionally challenging.
So the women play on the 28th. That is Friday, is the semifinal matchup. And it is a lot of ACC teams, three of the four teams. It's the top four seeds in the event. Carolina, the number one seed, facing Boston College, who is the number four seed, and that is at noon on Friday. The other semifinal is Syracuse and Northwestern. Northwestern, the two seed, Syracuse, the three seed. That is at 2 o'clock, and then the championship is on Sunday at noon.
You can watch Carolina's semifinal on ESPNU.
So that's the women's side of things. The guys' side of things, Adam, I mean, obviously Connor McCarthy was energized by his video pod appearance and finally getting the story of his dog's amazing tricks with the treats.
We got video in there. If you didn't watch the video pod, you need to go back. There's video of Connor McCarthy's dog. What else can we do?
And Connor McCarthy had a goal early in the game for Carolina in the win over Rutgers. But most importantly, he had the overtime game winner to move the Heels past Rutgers 12-11. And it's an old ACC get-together in the Final Four, Adam. Again, the top four seeds. Carolina, number one, taking on Virginia, who has played very well, blew out Georgetown in the quarterfinals. And Virginia did beat Carolina in the regular season this year.
Carolina also beat Virginia.
Yeah, they played each other twice. Each team won once. So Carolina-Virginia, one semifinal. The other semifinal, Duke and Maryland. Duke needing an overtime goal to get by Loyola of Maryland. And then Maryland beating Notre Dame by just one goal as well. So Carolina-Virginia is at noon on Saturday. That is the semifinal. The other one, Duke, Maryland, is at 2:30 on Saturday. The championship for that is on Memorial Day, Monday at 1 o'clock.
You can watch the men's semifinal on ESPN2. So you need the U on Friday, and you need the 2 on Saturday.
Tar Heels split with Duke as well in the regular season, each team winning on its home field. Maryland is undefeated, but is the 3 seed because the strength of the ACC was so much higher that Carolina and Duke ended up getting seeded higher than Maryland, even though Maryland was undefeated. The ACC, just as a conference, much stronger than the Big Ten this year and every year in lacrosse.
Also because the status of Juan Dixon and Steve Blake was uncertain.
Yeah, Chris Wilcox.
Yeah.
Don't know. Lonnie Baxter. Drew Nicholas. Yeah. Steve Blake.
Yep.
Steve Francis. You just want to keep naming old Maryland guys?
Lynn Bias.
Lynn Bias. Walt the Wizard Williams. Your play, Adam.
Oh, are we still going? Terrell Stokes.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I thought so.
Okay. Joe Smith.
X-ray hip.
Oh, that was going to be my next one. Joe Smith went number one in the draft ahead of Jerry Stackhouse and Rasheed Wallace.
Yes, he did.
I, in retrospect, believe that they would have taken either Jerry Stackhouse or Rasheed Wallace.
Probably true.
Probably Rasheed. Right? If you could do it all over again.
Yeah. Number one pick in our hearts for sure.
Adam, last one here. The doubles point, Adam.
The doubles point.
Women's tennis undefeated all year but loses to Pepperdine in the Final Four. Tar Heels are having like a 1990s Tar Heel basketball problem here where they're all getting to the Final Four, but then they're falling in the national semifinals.
Not a terrible problem to have.
No, not a terrible problem to have. But I know disappointing finish, of course, to the season. Although a lot of Tar Heels are having individual success as now they're playing for the individual national championship. But fall to Pepperdine 4-3, then Texas beats Pepperdine for the championship. And Adam, I got a little scoop on this. I heard through the grapevine that at the beginning of the season, Brian Kalba said the two teams he was most concerned about were Texas and Pepperdine. He said he thought those were the two teams that were good enough to knock Carolina off.
Well, Pepperdine's like an international conglomerate over there.
Right.
And look, I don't know what I'm talking about. There was a couple shaky line calls by a couple of those Pepperdine players in that match. Didn't determine the match, but especially against our good friend McKenna Jones, as she appeared to be making a comeback, she gets just a... That was a bad call, and as we've talked about, you call your own. And then it's up to the player who got the bad call to look at the umpire and say, hey, you sure about that? And they don't know because they're far away.
Right.
And this was on the opposite side of the court from the umpire, and so they let it stand. That changed the momentum of what appeared like it might be another McKenna Jones comeback.
So congratulations on a terrific season. Obviously a disappointing way to end it. And what has been such a great run, the ITA indoor national title, but can't follow it up with the NCAA title. Texas takes that. Adam, ACC baseball tournament, Carolina in as the number 6 overall seed. Now, I mean, you need like a notebook to take down all these algorithms to figure out the baseball tournament. And we've talked about this many, many, many times before, mostly when Adam and I were doing baseball. I mean, I get it. It's hard. It's hard to come up with a format that makes sense for the conference tournament because you don't want to tax teams too much with the NCAAs coming up. You want everybody to be able to play enough games that it feels like they've participated in some way and that you're getting some kind of true champion, but it is really hard to do. The way of the double elimination, like massive bracket, is long gone because you'd end up getting these crazy games and long days and just all of it. So the way the ACC does it is there are 4 pools of 3 teams each. The Tar Heels, Adam, are in pool C.
For Carolina.
Yeah. They are with NC State, who is the 3 seed, the Tar Heels, who are the 6 seed, and Pitt, who is the 10 seed. So, Carolina will play Pitt Tuesday at 7 o'clock. Tonight, 7 o'clock. Then they don't play again until Friday at 7 o'clock against NC State. And those are the only two games that Carolina is guaranteed to play. Because then they take the team that has the best record in the pool and they advance to a single elimination, four team, just semifinals and finals. You may be saying, but wait a second. If there's just three teams, isn't there a pretty high likelihood that all of them will be 1-1? Yes, there is. And when they do that, the best seeded team just advances. So it's a big advantage. It is a big advantage to the top four seeds because they can all finish 1-1 and they get to move on to the semifinals. So this year, somehow Notre Dame is the number one overall seed. Georgia Tech is 2, NC State 3, and Miami 4. Although, Adam, I mean, in looking at the baseball standings, there really is not a lot of separation. I mean, Notre Dame had a very good finishing record, but everybody else is really close to one another.
Going to be interesting to see how Carolina deploys the pitching. Austin Love was incredible on Thursday against Georgia Tech. Complete game, 15 strikeouts, no walks. He was a beast. I don't think you want to bring him back on Tuesday. I think maybe you try to get through Tuesday with sort of a staff day because then you've got 2 days off. All those guys can rest. You go with Love on Friday against the Pack, and then if you're fortunate enough to make it to Saturday, you just figure it out from there. But in reality, Carolina's game against Pitt doesn't matter a ton,
right,
in terms of advancing.
Right.
Now, does Carolina need a win this week to assure themselves of a spot in the NCAA tournament? Look, you just never know. Because sometimes you got a great RPI and you don't get in. And sometimes you got a not great RPI and all of a sudden you're a 2 seed somewhere close by. Probably be better to get at least one win this week to feel better about things. But Carolina's in a better spot than they were 2 weeks ago.
Well, Carolina enters at just 26-24. So the overall record is not great.
You don't want to go into selection day 26-26.
No. 18-18, though, in the ACC, so not terrible. That's a lot of conference games. Holy smokes. And as Adam referenced, Carolina's strength of schedule in RPI is really, really, really high. I think they have the number one non-conference strength of schedule in the ACC, and it's up there in the nation. And, like, strength of schedule in total, Tar Heels are, like, top five, I think. But Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe a couple years ago, Carolina ended up having what is still the best RPI of any team that was left out of the NCAA tournament.
Yes, that's right.
So it's not a guarantee. I think the Tar Heels would love to have one win in their pocket this week, for sure. But advancing in this event, to Adam's point, really it's that Friday game against State. Because the only way is if Pitt beat both Carolina and State, then it wouldn't matter. But, it's Pitt. So,
when Pitt was good when the Tar Heels played the Panthers, they were really rolling. But they're struggling right now.
Yeah. So, we'll see.
I was able to sneak a look at the ACC baseball offices at the whiteboard there.
Oh.
And get a little insight into the complex algorithm they use for determining the tournament.
Right.
And what it said is, which two teams playing Friday night will sell the most tickets?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Presto, Carolina, NC State, Friday at 7.
Yeah. The tournament, which is being held in Charlotte, the four games that are at 7 o'clock, Carolina plays in two of them, State plays in two of them, and the other one's Georgia Tech and Clemson. So, yes. Meanwhile, like Duke is playing at 11 a.m. twice. Notre Dame, the number one seed, is playing at 11 a.m. and 3. So, yeah, they want some fannies in the seats, Adam.
Well, now that they've got full capacity, just go hog wild.
So, best of luck to all those Tar Heel teams coming up this week and weekend. Hopefully, lots of success.
Alexa Graham and Sarah Davatilla through to the round of 16 in women's singles. How about former podcast William Blumberg, first ever ITA 10-time All-American? He's into the round of 16 in men's singles. He won on Monday, first time ever. So he's made it 5 straight years in singles and doubles, an All-American selection. First player not in Carolina history, but in tennis history.
Also, don't forget men's golf competing in the national championship round of its tournament. It tees off on Friday. This is they are paired with Clemson and Texas, so two good teams. They don't have to. They're not going just against those two teams. That's just who they're playing with. But they play Adam at 11:52 Pacific time on Friday, and then 6:32 a.m. is their tee off time on Saturday Pacific time. So that's an early start for round two.
That's a rough wake up call. I mean, you got to be at the practice range at like 5:30.
Yeah, so it's in Scottsdale, Arizona, is when this is occurring. Carolina is the number 6 seed out of the 30 teams. So there's 30 teams. This is, listen to how much golf you play, Adam, and you'll appreciate this.
Yeah, I understand this.
So all 30 teams play 54 holes of stroke play. So Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all 30 teams play 18 holes every day. After 54 holes, after those three rounds, the top 15 teams then play another 18 on Monday. After that, the top 8 teams then play in a match play quarterfinal, semifinal championship to determine the champion. So you could be playing 7 rounds of golf. I mean, you will. Like, the winner has to play 7 rounds of golf to win it. That's a lot of golf.
That would be a lot for me.
Yeah.
Why do they insist on this match play format that no one seems to really like?
Because it's so much. No, everybody likes match play. You're just wrong on that. It's more exciting. Everybody likes match play.
But I felt like we had determined it wasn't necessarily determinative of a
championship. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, I think if you just took the stroke play, it's probably gives you a fairer picture of who the champion is, because that's who played the best for the longest period of time, obviously, for the tournament. That's how the golf tournaments work, Adam. But match play is so exciting. Mm. It's just fun to watch. And it's, you know, it's 1v1 and hole to hole. And I do love match play. You got me fired up just thinking about it, Adam.
I can see that.
That reminds me that we're brought to you by Pinehurst. And Adam and I are going to play a match play on number 2 for charity. How long would it take you to finish a round on Pinehurst number 2?
I feel like 30 minutes for the first hole.
There's Gil Hans's stunning redesign of number 4 as well. There's the Cradle, the fun short course. There's the stylish North and South Bar. It has bourbon, whiskey, and scotches. And there's the Pinehurst Brewing Company with craft beers and classic North Carolina barbecue. There's never been more to discover at the Cradle of American Golf than right now. Go to Pinehurst.com. Plan your visit. Adam, also some men's basketball news. As the worst kept secret is finally seeing the light of day. And that's Pat Sullivan has joined the Tar Heel basketball staff, and his official title is Director of Recruiting. Of course, Pat Sullivan, former player here, played in 3 Final Fours, coached for Carolina, was an assistant coach under Bill Guthridge. He had spent 18 years in the NBA in various roles, most of those as a bench coach, an assistant coach. Adam, I think it's a great move. You get somebody who's obviously a very good basketball mind. And I think you get nearly 20 years in the NBA. So you have somebody who is a very strong tie to the NBA. So not only is he being Pat Sullivan, going to do whatever director of recruiting means he's going to do, but also I think he's a valuable asset to the players as far as a liaison with the NBA, help them understand kind of what it takes to get to that next level, because you're talking to somebody who knows firsthand, who's lived in that world for almost 20 years.
I don't think this is breaking any new ground here, but you really get a strong Dean Smith feel.
Absolutely.
On this staff. And I think we had sort of not felt that in the second half of the Roy Williams era, because he had his own era and he had his own accomplishments, and it was the Roy Williams era. I think if you think back to 03, 04, 05, I mean, Coach Smith was in the locker room after the 05 championship game. Be sure to watch that one shining moment. So you had that at the beginning of the Roy Williams era, but I'm really starting to get that feeling coming back. I mean, Hubert Davis talked about how he was teammates with Pat Sullivan, and that connection with him made him think of Pat Sullivan as soon as he was hired. And so big Dean Smith vibes on the staff.
I feel like I have seen a quote from Pat Sullivan, but this it may not be the case. I have to imagine he's not leaving an assistant coach job in the NBA for anywhere other than Carolina. So, I mean, I think you're getting just another really strong basketball person as a member of this staff. I just think this is a great, great addition.
Well, and I think another thing about him is he had moved around quite a bit in the NBA. And, of course, if you think way back, he was on staff here at Carolina. People kind of forget that sometimes.
For the 98 and 2000 Final Fours with Bill Guthridge.
So pretty good run. I think he's probably ready to be somewhere for a more extended period of time. He's got two kids, got a family, and you have to think it's probably appealing to him to move to Chapel Hill, a place he knows and is familiar with, wants to bring his family here and not move around quite as frequently.
Adam, anything else from the Tar Heel side of things before we get to our conversation with Bill Raftery?
The one other piece of basketball news is that Carolina announced the season tip-off tournament in Uncasville, Connecticut. The Tar Heel is going to face Purdue on Saturday, November 20th. And then on Sunday, November 21st, there'll be a consolation game, a championship game. The other game is Villanova against Tennessee. So somebody good's going 0-2 in that event. And somebody's coming out 2-0 feeling really good about themselves. So don't have game times yet, but there's a notation on your calendar, Tar Heels and Purdue. Look, we've just been to West Lafayette. We know all about it.
I would have to think, I mean, all four of those teams going to be ranked, right? I mean, that's early enough in the season that probably none of them have had a bad start to the year. And so you're going to get 14. I mean, I guess Carolina's probably going to be the lowest ranked of the four. But you're probably going to have four top 20-ish type of teams in that event. That's a really good event.
Yes.
All right. Bill Raftery. This was a lot of fun. I enjoyed talking with Bill Raftery.
He was nice to talk to us because he didn't have to. Season was over and took some time out. He had some other engagements he was on the way to. He had some dishes to wash.
Yeah.
And then he talked to us. And really fun guy to talk to. Always enjoy seeing him. When you see him, you know it's a big game.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you see him, you know you're always going to hear some great stories, and that's what he had for us.
So some good stories, some fun stuff with Bill Raftery. We'll come back. We're going to have a early in the week 5-second challenge, since this is our only show of the week, Adam's List, and more. All coming up on the Carolina Insider.
I believe that one of the most unusual things in the world is any person who can do a basketball game, and college basketball fans in general agree, I like that guy.
Yeah, no one dislikes him.
So Bill Raftery is that guy. He's the guy who does the games, and when you turn on the game and you hear his voice, you think, hey, this is going to be a fun game, and I'm probably going to learn something. And you don't go on the internet to complain about him, which is very rare. So, Bill, thanks so much for giving us some time today.
Well, thank you. I think you should talk to my wife and children. You might change your opinion a little bit. But no, it's been a joyful ride, you know, for me. You know, it keeps you young, obviously. Part of what we do is to try and transmit what's going on and not ruin it with our dialogue. So, but it's all about the players and what they're able to do each and every night. And, you know, the respect that I think you do and I do have for these young kids that they're all not going to be pros, but, you know, they're going to get a lot out of life by what they do during their college days.
Bill, what keeps you going? What keeps you still doing this? Been in broadcasting now for decades. What keeps you around the game and keeps you interested in what you're doing?
I think good wine list maybe is a good start. That gets you out of the gate a little bit. I don't know. I think it's just the joy I get out of it. You know, you're with great people. They feel the same way you do about the game. And they just want to do the best job that they can do. But, you know, it's if you're tired, it's basically from travel. And this year was the exception. We did the Fox games in our dining room. And I've told people this story, you probably heard it, where we're finally using the dining room for something constructive in our house. I don't think we've used the dining room since the kids were at home, you know. But and then CBS on the weekend would have a studio up by Giant Stadium. So invariably, you know, I was at the Baylor-Gonzaga game that was postponed. And then we did the CBS Classic, which Carolina was in. And that was it until late in the year. I did a Kansas game at Kansas. And then, of course, the NCAA tournament started. So that was the only travel. So fatigue was not an issue, or, you know, preparation certainly wasn't an issue because you were stymied in a way by being in the house and getting all the information fed to you by these brilliant young guys that work for these different networks.
I have to think that in the area of the country you're from, in that time frame, you must have had some Frank McGuire interactions at some point in your basketball life.
Well, hey, Rosie. Frank recruited me. 1959. I hate to admit my age. Couldn't have been me. But they lost in the there was a triple header at the Garden in the NCAA, and Frank's team lost to Navy, which would shock people now, but Navy was big time. I think John Clune was their All-American. And Ben Carnival, who actually worked at Carolina when it was maybe an Air Force base, or I think they were in the service and they were, you know, set down there. But anyhow, I went to the game with my high school coach. And, you know, in those days, you know, my family's Catholic, and my folks, we were going to a Catholic college. That was it. So anyhow, Frank, with his persuasive style, got my coach and I to come to the Garden. And after the game, they lost. And boy, did he handle it with style, too. I mean, it was, you know, upsetting, I'm sure, to him with this unbelievable program that they ended up losing. But anyhow, I'm in the locker room with him. And he said that, you know, in those days, they had Cunningham and a bunch of other guys that were all from Catholic schools, Tommy Kearns, et cetera, Pete Brennan, Quigg. I mean, that was that 57 team, you know. So they were gone, obviously. And now I'm a high school kid. And he said, I just want you to know one thing. Down in Chapel Hill, I'm like a missionary. I take all these Catholic youngsters and make sure they go to church on Sunday and things like that. So, but the kicker was he gave me a $20 bill. And I had that $20 for like a month and a half, buying hamburgers for people, you know. Imagine the prices in those days, 10 cents for Coke and et cetera. But anyhow, fast forward, years later, he became the director of athletics at the Garden. I don't know if you guys knew that at all. And obviously a big reason the Big East moved to the Garden was his relationship with Dave Gavitt. And at all the Big East meetings from then on until he retired, Frank would come. And he would take, with Dave Duffy, who was the marketing expert of the Big East, they would take all the women and they would plan something each day for the women. Now, who would be more charming with men or women than Frank McGuire? So it was really, in fact, he wanted me to become his assistant athletic director at the Garden, that when he would retire, that I would take over. Since then, they don't have that title, obviously, but he was just an amazing man. The way he dressed and handled himself, there was just an air about him of success. He exuded confidence. And the guys who played for him, the guys who started, let me rephrase that, because he didn't go to the bench very often. And then later on in life, he was the Philly, the Warriors coach, when Wilt got his 100th point. Yep. And a friend of mine, Eddie Conlon, who was an All-American from Fordham, was on that team. So he shared some stories about Frank, always buttoned the tie and had a nice way with the officials, condemning them without being over the top kind of a guy. But he was just a pleasant guy. And of course, that's when I met Dean as well in those days. And, God bless him, one of my favorite human beings of all time. And Roy put together a golf tournament, Roy, Doug Moe, Larry Brown, and they would invite different people. And it was almost like a congressional appointment if they asked you to come to Pinehurst. And, got to know all of them a lot better. When I use the word adored, I just love what Dean Smith was all about. I mean, he was obviously a winner, great recruiter, but the family atmosphere, which you read and hear a lot about, he did that from day one. I remember doing games down there and all the family, they were in his office. This is pregame, where most coaches are a little uptight, thinking about the potential outcome, whether it's good or bad. But I just admired him. And one of my last memories in his office, and we're sitting there, and Eddie Fogler had been an assistant years before. And he said, "Billy, I don't have any beer now since Eddie left." Eddie left for Wichita State and eventually South Carolina. So here we are. I don't know what we had, but it was terrible. No ice and a Coca-Cola cup. And we're chatting away. I'm saying to myself, this is what heaven is all about. I'm sitting here with Dean Smith, chug-a-lugging a lousy beverage. But I could have stayed there for a week. So anyhow, those are some of the reminiscences I have of him.
Bill, from those Carolina coaches to another one in Roy Williams, of course, Carolina basketball going through a big transition right now with Coach Williams stepping away after his fantastic career. You've know Coach Williams. You've done a bunch of Carolina games and Kansas games before that.
Right.
I'd just be interested in your thoughts on his impact on college basketball. And it might be a little too early to reflect totally on his career, but just everything that he's meant to the game.
Yeah, well, of course, he was the JV coach when I first met him on the staff. And Bill Guthridge, by the way, I was the only one that would call him Billy. And he would say, "Bill, call me Bill." But we coached in Puerto Rico together. And on the weekend, Bill would come and stay in my apartment. I was up in San Juan. He was in Ponce. And they ended up winning the title a couple of years in a row. And so I knew the staff really well. Bill and I went out to Dorado Beach, and Chichi Rodriguez was the pro. I'm really going sideways on you guys. I apologize.
No, we love it.
But we're at Dorado Beach, and Bill was a gentleman and would never step out of bounds or say or do anything wrong or take advantage of his position. And he's telling me, we're having lunch, he said, "I coach golf at Kansas State." I said, "No." And he was a good golfer. I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah, I had Jim Colbert, who ended up being a PGA pro and a senior tour guy." He said, "And Chichi and he were the best of friends." So now I'm thinking, I'm going to go for $100 green fee and whatever else we had to pay. And I've got the coach of a guy that Chichi has to know. So I went into the pro shop and I said, "Chichi, you don't know me. This is my name. I'm with Bill Guthridge, who was Jim Colbert's golf coach." And I didn't know this at K-State. I didn't know this part. He said, "What?" He said, "Jim Colbert was the only guy that understood what I was going through on the tour, in terms of the way he was treated, unfairly, unwisely, not in a nice way." But anyhow, he sat down, we finished lunch, he picked up lunch, he paid for the green fees. And I said, "Bill, you got to learn to speak up, But anyhow, getting back to Roy, so I knew the staff really well. And, what they did, we clinicked with them once when I was at Seton Hall. Mm-hmm. I went down and Dean put us up and they showed us tape. We had visiting coaches. Then each guy would come in and spend an hour with us, which was a great learning experience, obviously. And Roy was part of that. So as the years would go on, the assistant would be maybe more available than the head coach because of the obvious reasons. So you always sat down and Roy would give you some insight into things. And then obviously with his success at Kansas, Rex Walters was one of his players and he was with the Nets and he would come visit whether on the road or whatever, which he did until the end. I mean, he would stop by and see his former players, which gets back to that Dean Smith kind of wrap your arms around these guys for life. And so at any rate, Roy was so humble about beating Dean's record. I mean, he didn't even want to do that. That was the respect that he held that wonderful gentleman. And so, you know, with Roy retiring, I'm really disappointed. I'm disappointed because the game loses a great guy and a great name. Did everything the right way. And, you know, I left a message on the phone. I really didn't talk to him when he did retire. But through that Pinehurst thing, we were teamed together frequently. And I couldn't play a lick. And, you know, he always tells a story. He used to call me partner because he always ended up with the worst player, basically. And he was trying to reach a par five in two. And he was going to cut across this and that. I'm going, no, we're in the lead here. You can't. He said, get up that hill and stand there. So just so I know what the direction to hit the ball. So that was my contribution. He hit it over my head onto the green. So some great fun and connections with that group. Just solid individuals that, you know, love the game and love the players they were lucky enough to coach.
Now, when you got to observe these Carolina gatherings at Pinehurst or elsewhere, number one, what struck you about the way they interacted away from the court? And number two, who were the best and worst golfers?
Well, Roy was up top. Larry Brown was very good. You know, Doug Moe was like me, you know. We talked a good game. let's see. George Karl was good. Then the guests, you know, Jerry West was very good. Jerry West was probably the best player that was ever invited that I can recall. But what was interesting, we had a real long table, and it was secured where there was only one entrance for the waiter, and nothing left that room, basically. And at the far end was the Tammany Hall, you know, the aforementioned Carolina guys, and they would talk about who was going to be a partner tomorrow, who was it, you know, the dollar amount that you owed. I remember I played with Larry Bird one day, and Larry shot like, say, 76. And they're now that's really a good score. And he was a good player, too. So now they're going over the finances for that day. You know, you're up this, you're down this. And I was Larry's partner that day. And anyhow, they go, Larry Bird down 400. And Larry Bird goes, golly, I thought I played pretty good. So anyhow, those were fun get-togethers. And Dean would always come down to, he used to call it the Irish end of the table. You know, Cunningham was down there. Rod Thorne was down the other end, amongst other guys over the years. And he'd come down and sit before he'd go up to bed, you know. So, I don't know, just you guys bringing out some wonderful memories.
Bill, on a scale of 1 to 10 of classiness, if 1 is like rolling in the mud with pigs and 10 is like drinking out of a diamond-encrusted goblet with the royal family, where does Jim Nance fall on this list of classiness?
Well, Jim, as you know, has a wine called The Calling. Make sure you tell him this is a public advertisement for his company. Now, the money from the success of that wine, The Calling, goes towards Alzheimer's his father's honor in Houston. And what's crazy about life, and you guys will experience it, or you probably have already, where you touch base with somebody and then you get busy doing your life, they get busy with their life, and all of a sudden you reconnect. And Jim's first two games at CBS he did with me. And one was in Miami that I recall, and I kept him out very late that night. The next night he wouldn't go out with me. But then he came to the studio And I think Brent was going to go on the road then. I think that's who he came in after. And his first studio event was with me. You know, crazy as it sounds. And I do recall the first night of the NCAA tournament, which was usually very, the West Coast game was really late. It'd be finished maybe 1, 1.15, 1.30. And so we're sitting there waiting in case we have to go back on the air. I said, you know, we haven't eaten. You want to go to dinner? He said, you can't go to dinner. It's 1.30 in the morning. I said, don't worry about it. But we went to Runyon's, and, you know, the place is hopping. A lot of writers, a lot of announcers. It was like a lively, well-known saloon in New York. We finish. We get back to the hotel. Now, he's got to be in at 10 in the morning. I don't have to be there until maybe 11, 11:15 or something. But we got back to the hotel, and his New York Times was at his door already, the morning edition. So anyhow, thank God he was young, good looking, and it didn't bother him. I put ice packs under my eyeballs to work the show probably.
Eric Montross has this Italian restaurant in Newark, New Jersey, right? Is that the place, Eric? Like, Il Villaggio, I think, is the name of it. That he says is like, that's the place you go when you want to have a meal and like an evening that you'll never forget, which we have had a couple there with Eric. When I say to you, where should we go to have a meal and an evening we should never forget, where would you say?
Wow. Well, we used to go to Nicola's uptown, 84th Street, all the time. But two of our children moved with their families downtown, so we sort of stopped going, you know. Now, after our games now, they don't have the hangouts in New York like they used to for a lot of reasons, not the pandemic, but, you know, just times have changed. People aren't staying out as late. They're getting home. The concern about over-consuming. Things of that nature.
But, people couldn't keep up with you, basically, is what you're saying.
I think my image is not really an honest description, but anyhow, I guess I just let it roll a little bit. But PJ Clark's is one we've gone through lately after the Big East tournament late at night. They're one of the few that does stay open. But things have really changed in New York. It's, you know, one of El Vagabondo was one. I don't know is that the one you said, Il Villaggio? I'm not sure of Il Villaggio, but Il Vagabondo, they had a bocce ball court in the middle. And wow. The Rangers really made it famous in the 60s and 70s. That was their hangout. And that was a place that a lot of coaches went and hung out. And you know, when I was at Seton Hall in the 70s, you know, we didn't make any money. That was a great place to go with your family for a birthday for the kids. That was very reasonable. And that was one of them. But unfortunately, it's just changed quite a bit.
Bill, you have, let's see, we've got Onions. We've got the Man-to-Man. We've got...
with a kiss.
Yeah, we've got Send It In, Jerome. Which is the one that stands out to you? Which one do you love the most?
Well, you know, just by those statements, you realize I didn't go to Harvard. You know, it's like... It's all of those things are, I guess, where you grew up, what your pals were like, who you hung out with, where you went. And not that anybody said any of those things, but most of it was to be succinct on the air. And I didn't realize, like, the man-to-man, I didn't realize that I was even doing that, but it was a way of, and Jones, you do the play-by-play, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
Well, like, it was a way of me getting out of the way for the play-by-play guy who's on the floor, you know, about that kind of stuff. So I was in the airport early on, and I hear this guy go, Middleman. I'm going, Jesus, what a nitwit this guy is. I had no idea that he was imitating me until he told me. So all of those things were, you know, the background that you've been exposed to pretty much. But some of them I get tired of saying because, you know, I feel I'm obligated to say it. But, you know, the Onions thing, Ian Eagle, who you guys have heard of, really a talented guy and a good friend, We did the Nets together for 8 or 9 years. And he claims Onions was a game against, my goodness, the Magic. Because I kept saying it was Miami. We were so, Kevin Edwards makes a corner three for the Nets to win maybe their 10th game out of 60. And I gave it an Onions. I had never heard it, never said it. It just came out. And it was like, what's interesting too, is ESPN in the early days, I said it and I get a phone call from the boss. He said, you can't say that anymore. That's, you know, whatever, suggestive. So I stopped. And then the writers are doing stories saying, you know, somebody makes a big play writing Onions. I get a phone call. It's okay to use it now. So, you know, you can't satisfy everybody, but that's going way back. And, you know, I guess the early 80s we're talking about, or later than that, late 80s, I guess.
How many days out of 7 does someone come up to you and ask you to say, send it in Jerome?
Doesn't happen every day, but it does happen frequently, I would say, particularly during the season. And I can't tell you, Fitzgerald Fieldhouse, where that took place, I would say they 5,200. I've heard more, like 18,000 people have told me they were at the game. And then the shattered glass, I've had people actually show me the shattered glass and, you know, just, and then people saying they had it. Well, if they had it, it would have been 4 backboards, you know, that kind of thing. So, but those were the cozy days, you know, the formation of the Big East and the competitiveness, you know, everybody was on edge. And, you know, it was a one name league, really, you know. It was like, you know, it was Patrick and Chris, and Eddie Pickney. The coaches were all one name too, Louis, John, Jimmy, 2 Jimmies, you know, with Calhoun. And McDonough used to go nuts. When we would do a Syracuse, Connecticut game, I would say, Jimmy did this, Jimmy did that. Sounds like a Seinfeld episode, right? So he said, which Jimmy are you talking about? You know, but anyhow.
Bill, I've got 2 questions for you. Number one, we are good friends with Freddie Kiger. We've had him on the podcast before. I have heard stories that at times you and Freddie hung out after games in Chapel Hill. Is this an accurate representation?
Yes, yes. Freddie used to tell me the Big East stinks. That's what he used to say. This is ACC. You're in the real world now, down here. And, you know, because I always loved that conference. Just something about it. You know, as a kid in the, you know, the 50s and Tobacco Road and, you know, just the same group kind of, you know. Now, of course, it's expanded in some ways better, probably some financially maybe better, but other ways it's, you know, not that it's lost its luster. I don't mean that, but it's like there's so many teams that are being, you know, getting into the top 3 or 4 that they didn't have before. You know, right. You could almost name preseason who the top 3 or 4 in the conference was, but now Florida State's a good example. You know, they're on the scene and, you know, growing large. Of course, Syracuse, another one coming into the league. But, no, Freddie, you know, we had some experiences down there. And, you know, occasionally we'd be together and somebody would say, you like Duke, you know. Freddie would take 10 steps back, figured he might get hit, you know. But, no, those were fun days going down there, visiting with all those people.
And, Bill, my other question is, you have spent your life around basketball and college basketball. It just feels like college basketball is at a bit of a crossroads right now with just the transfer portal and just so many different things coming into the game. I'd be interested in where you think college basketball is and where it needs to go to continue to stay healthy.
Well, have you had Billis on?
Not for a while. It has been a while since we've had him on.
Well, he's too smart for me to argue with. But the Irish Conjunction, however, I mean, I think it's really unattractive. The portal in so many ways, you know, the obvious, you know, kids not willing to reach back and learn the position. And maybe when they're sophomores become that starting guard or forward or whatever. I think it's destroying the lower level universities athletically, whatever they might be, mid-majors, you might call them. You know, there's a kid from Siena that's going to Penn State that's a sophomore. Like, it really good numbers. That just destroys Siena. You know, it's just free market kind of. You know, now you've got to shake hands with the opposing players, tell him how well he played, because maybe he'll join the portal and you recruit him the following year. I mean, to me, it's more like the Wild West. And I understand where Jay's coming from, free enterprise and things of that nature. But I just, you know, nobody really wants to put in the time. Nobody really has the allegiance to the university. No, I shouldn't say nobody. It creates a situation where there's not an allegiance to the 12 guys you've been working hard with either. So I don't know. It's just like potluck, just, you know, grabbing straws from both ends, players as well as the kid from McClug, the kid from Georgetown that went to Texas Tech. Mm-hmm. You know, I just saw he put himself in the portal, and then obviously the new coaching staff, Adams and company, spent time and they took his name out of the portal. I mean, it's, I don't know. To me, it's unattractive. But I guess that's the changing of the times. I used to be able, as a kid in the 50s, name all the starting teams in Major League Baseball. You know, now tell me who can name half of them or a quarter of them. And I just think it's a loss for the university. And really, a lot of guys are chasing the inevitable doom. You're not going to be an NBA player. I mean, the reality is the percentage is so minimal that, you know, it's like instead of being a part of something and helping it grow, it's almost like running away from some obligations. But, you know, again, I'm not arguing with Billis. He's an attorney. And he has his reasons for thinking that way. But this image and likeness thing is going to be wild. You know, let's say take Eric Montrose. You mentioned him. Let's say Eric gets his picture in the dealership or gets some remuneration, and then 10 of the other guys don't have anything because they're not a big name. I mean, what happened to the concept of team? And we're getting away from it. And I guess kids have been taken advantage of, I understand, but, you know, taking the whole thing in perspective, you know, we've just opened up another opportunity to run away from reality, maybe.
What would that Bill Raftery in the 1950s going on those recruiting visits with Frank McGuire and the Tar Heels and everybody else, what would he think about if we told him you're going to be able to make a life in college basketball and you're going to be able to do this your whole life?
you know, I guess like anything, you know, the future, you never know what direction you're being forced into or that you're attracted to. And I you know, we only, the recruiting days then, we only visited schools we thought we might go to. It was, that was the way it was. And, you know, you were taught not to take advantage of trips, whether they be glorious to Hawaii or West Coast or whatever some attractive spot might be. But, no, to have an opportunity to survive, through basketball. And I was in the business world for maybe 20 years in banking. I couldn't balance my checking book, but we, you know, we had the Giants, the Jets, the Meadowlands, the casinos. We had the highway authorities, things like that. So we were basically like salesmen, but I was able to pursue this joy. My boss at the time loved it, the exposure. So you need some help along the way to, you know, survive or cushion, whether it's economically or time-wise. So I was lucky for that too. You really need godfathers, no question about it. And, you know, people who believe in you, care for you and like what you're doing and have your best interests at heart. And I've met a lot of people like that. You know, you mentioned Frank, Dave Gavitt was incredible to me. Just so many nice people that, you know, put you in position to either make it or fail, you know, that kind of deal. So I'm lucky man.
Great stuff from Bill Raftery. As Adam mentioned before we got started, really appreciate his time and hanging out with us for, gosh, half an hour and telling some fun stories. So really good to talk with him. And that interview, as all our interviews are, brought to you by Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field, but doing it with your eyes closed. Trusted choice, Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. They don't want you to do that, and instead they want you to be safe. Stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone while driving. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit trustedchoice.com and find an agent near you. Now, normally the five-second challenge, of course, comes in our Friday show, but we're not going to have a Friday show this week because Adam's got to go to the beach and hang out and get a suntan.
I just caught my first tube, sir.
Sir, I just caught my first tube. Sir.
Caught my first tube this morning. Sir.
Oh, Keanu. So we're going 5 second challenge today. Adam, I did not use Isaac's help today.
Oh. Look at me, I'm Jones. I can do my own work. I'm not a plagiarist.
Okay. Now, I have to admit, Adam, I think you're going to get a lot of these answers. Mm. I would be stunned if you didn't, in fact. It's a pretty easy one.
Good. Oh, great. Okay, good.
Now, I will say the details of this are sometimes a little fuzzy. Mm. Okay? So, we know this, Adam. Oh, Adam, wait. Are you ready for your five-second challenge, Adam?
Yes.
We know that both men's lacrosse and women's lacrosse are playing for national championships this weekend.
Correct.
Adam, according to Wikipedia, the Tar Heels have won 46 NCAA team championships.
Sure.
There's only seven teams, Adam, that have won those 46 championships.
Okay.
Adam, men's and women's lacrosse trying to add to that total this weekend. How many of the seven teams that have won NCAA championships to make up those 46 can you name in 5 seconds starting now?
Men's and women's basketball, men's and women's lacrosse, field hockey, men's
soccer. Oh, you were so close.
Women's soccer.
No, no, Adam, no, you almost did it. I can't believe it. I was like, oh, he's going to do it. He's going to get 100%. But Adam forgot soccer. Just no big deal, women's soccer with 21 NCAA titles. So, Adam, you did great. You
got, if it had only been the seven-second challenge.
Only it was a six-second challenge. Men's basketball was six, 1957, 82, 93, 05, 09, 17. Men's lacrosse has five NCAA titles, 81, 82, 86, 91, and then 2016. Men's soccer has two. That's the one you didn't quite get in time, 2001 and 2011. Women's basketball, of course, the 1994 NCAA title. We know the field hockey has nine, including three in a row, 85, 95, 96, 97, 07, 09, and then 18, 19, 20. Women's lacrosse, 2013 and 2016 national champions. And then women's soccer, goodness gracious, 1982, 83, 84, 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91, 92, 93, 94, 96, 97, 99, 2000, 03, 06, 08, 09, and 2012. So, lots of championships.
Field hockey is pretty amazing to me that they were able to go a decade between twice.
Yeah.
I mean, you've done it in multiple different eras repeatedly.
Adam can, as some extra credit, Adam, Tar Heels have other types of national championships that aren't NCAA national titles.
Right.
Do you know who they are?
Well, there was a Helms Foundation title for men's basketball.
That's right, 1924.
Women's soccer had a something other than NCAA championship.
Yes, it was an AIAW soccer championship. This was before NCAA, so that came in 1981.
Men's and women's tennis have ITA indoor titles.
Women have titles in 13, 15, 18, 20, and 21. The guys have it in 2016 and 21. And there's only, Adam, there's two more, and you will not get them.
Okay.
It is men's and women's team handball.
Wow.
2004, 5, and 6 for the men, and 2004, 9, 10, and 11 for the women. I'm going to be honest with you. I was around during that time period. I didn't even know that occurred.
Me either. I didn't even know there was a place to play handball on campus.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch the Olympics, I think I might like handball. It looks fun.
It does look fun. I always think I'm like, I see water polo and I'm like, I could do that. And then there's no way I could do it.
Well, I can tell you, my dad is a professional water polo player.
What?
No. He had somehow during his time at Carolina, he ended up playing water polo. Mm. I think for credit, as like a class.
Right.
Like maybe that was his PE or something.
Right.
And I can remember from the time I was a very small tyke, he gave me important advice that I've remembered right until this day and that I now am handing on to the Carolina Insider podcast.
Right.
When they ask you your swimsuit size on the first day of water polo class, say double XL.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a Speedo.
go large.
Yeah. Because there's not a lot left to the imagination in the water polo uniform.
Even for just like the random PE version of
water polo. Yeah, that's right.
What did you take for PE in college, Adam? Did you do PEs?
I didn't have to take one.
I took golf.
Mm, well, that's paid enormous dividends. Yeah. You should go back and be a guest lecturer. Yeah.
And I took tennis. I enjoyed both my PEs.
Clearly.
I remember the final exam in golf was you had to play a par 3. And it was like...
Was it at the Cradle?
No. It was at... I guess it was at Finley.
Oh, I thought maybe it might be a par 3 at the Cradle.
And I'm trying to remember. I think as long as you got a bogey, or better.
Wow.
I think you got an A on the test. I got bogey.
That seems kind of harsh. I mean, one thing goes wrong and you've been working hard all year, all semester to get that A. And the duck picks up your ball and carries it off. All of a sudden, you got a double bogey and you got a B that you don't deserve.
By the way, you saying that made me think of this. I don't want you to make a big deal about this, but I was out running the other day.
Okay.
And this hawk flies by. Like, to the point where, so I was running with my dog, and there were two other people out moseying about, which I get so territorial when I run. I'm like, why are these other people out here?
Right. Yeah, this is my time.
Why are you out with your dog
right.
on this sidewalk? I want this sidewalk with my dog. But anyway, there were other people out, two other groups of people, including one of them that had a little tiny dog. And for just a second, I was like, is that hawk about to go after that dog? Like, that's how low this hawk was. It was also low enough, Adam, for me to see it had some kind of massive, I don't know if it was a rabbit or a squirrel, or like a gerbil or something, but it was some big rodent type of things in its talons that it was taking home.
Well, see, now you've hit on one of my fears. We have one big dog that is not a hawk threat.
Right.
And then we have one little dog that I'm petrified because one of our neighbors said, for some reason, like in the early days we had little dog, one of our neighbors was like, you better watch out. There's been a hawk around.
Yeah.
So I am petrified to let little dog out off the leash. I feel like if he's on the leash, the hawk knows not to mess with me. He looks at me, he's like, that's a fellow predator right there.
It's like, look, I'm not here to go head-to-head with another apex champion. I don't need to go against another alpha right now.
You don't see me going after a mountain lion, do you? So I'm not going after whatever that is on the other end of that leash. But if little dog goes out without a leash, I'm convinced that at a moment's notice, a hawk will swoop out of the sky, pick up little dog, and carry him off to Kansas or wherever.
Yeah, that'd be the end of little dog.
I don't want that. I am scared of that.
Hawks are legit. I respect you, hawks. I know you're listening.
Big aviary listenership.
Yeah, we respect you.
You've got me nervous now. We're going to have to take a break. I'm going to have to call the kids and tell them not to let little
dog out. Guinea pig? Is that a big one? they're bigger than gerbils, right? Yeah, gerbils are.
Oh, yeah, guinea pig's bigger.
Guinea pig's pretty big, right?
Yeah.
It looked like a guinea. It looked guinea pig size, whatever was in its talons.
Where would a hawk find a guinea pig?
I don't know, which makes me think it had to be like a rabbit or a squirrel.
Could it have been a possum?
Yeah. I don't think. I feel like I would have. You know how ugly possums are. I feel like I would have noticed if it was a possum.
This hawk was pretty close to you.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I mean, if it was close enough for me to very clearly see, oh, man, it's got a large rodent in its talons. Yeah. That's right. We were just, you know what? We were just casing the neighborhood together. He was like, oh, my fellow body man's out here. Let's go.
Well, when you're running at that speed, the hawk just naturally falls in step.
Probably got a little challenged by me when he saw how fast I was running.
Was the hawk dribbling a basketball?
7 minutes and 20 seconds.
Was it Trae Young?
For the hawk.
Now, don't stop. Don't stop. Just keep recording. Yeah, I know. Keep recording. This is important. You got to keep going.
Oh, I don't ever get to be asked to be on the podcast, so I have to make a special delivery.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
On a special day.
Okay.
It's not every day someone turns 50. So I have a special birthday delivery for you.
What? See? Jones doesn't even know what's going on right now. That's good.
Good thing is, neither do I.
Yeah. Pretty soon, Jones, it's going to be your birthday.
Yeah, pretty soon.
Also going to be Adam's birthday very soon.
We're skipping over that. I don't want you to go another year on Earth.
I like how, by the way, I'm very glad I wore a t-shirt and shorts. All right, keep going.
I don't want you to go another year on Earth without this item in your life.
Okay. Is it a hawk?
No, but it's also, it's not an apex predator. You don't need to worry about that.
who
wrapped? Clearly I wrapped that myself. Couldn't you tell by the presentation?
Oh boy.
All right, let me get some scissors here so I can get this open. This is for my next career as a UPS delivery man.
Yeah, it's an ultimate Irish peeler. As seen on the ACC network. By the way, Kirsch is here delivering this, and Adam, it's got a julienne blade.
Yep.
A potato eye remover.
Oh yeah.
A finger holder.
Yep.
A potato eye remover. A built-in grater and a double-side serrated blade.
And comes in Notre Dame green.
Look at this. Good work, Miles. Thank you.
Or is it not Miles?
Well, Adam, what a moment.
I gotta tell you, you need to fully appreciate this gift because they're not easy to get.
Yeah.
They shut down the Ultimate Irish Peeler
website.
Yeah,
we went to the website.
They shut down. I think because they were out of inventory because incredible demand for this product. So I kept checking repeatedly every day. Reload the Ultimate Irish Peeler website. Reload.
Yeah.
Finally, one day, it pops back up. And I think, well, it looks like we've got more inventory. These were shipped. I did get the buy two and get a discount.
Oh, so you have one too.
I've got one at my house. I've peeled a potato with it.
Oh, so it does work.
I wouldn't say it works, but it's definitely something you can use to peel a potato.
It's an average Irish peeler.
Yeah.
Way too much. Woo.
Happy birthday to Beach.
Well, thank you. This is birthday. Yeah. We're early. This is a good 2 weeks early.
Yeah.
Well, thank you,
Kirsch. I didn't know if we'd have another pod between now and then.
Yeah, that's a good point. Thank you, Kirsch.
You're welcome. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Adam.
I'm glad to help.
Not Miles. Great job.
Thank you, Miles. All right. Back to work. Enough of this fun. Back to work.
Always back to the grindstone in here. He doesn't have time for this fun.
By the way, Adam's gift was brought to you by the Playing It Forward campaign. Carolina Scholarship Drive to honor Roy and Wanda Williams. Say thank you to Coach and Wanda by supporting scholarships and continuing their legacy on campus. Learn more at playingitforward.unc.edu. Adam, it was like I was on Funniest Home Video or something. Like
Candid Camera.
Yeah, I didn't know what was happening.
Yeah, that was the whole plan. Miles and I, or not Miles and I, have been cooking that up for quite a while, no pun intended, with the Ultimate Irish Peeler.
I love how the one day that I wear a t-shirt that you put me on camera for this.
I know, because usually you do it shirtless, so I was glad that you were more dressed.
Normally
up
I'm dressed for water polo. All right.
Can you imagine what the Ultimate Irish Peeler unboxing video is going to do on YouTube? Tremendous clicks.
All right, Adam. How about your list?
Okay.
I just want you to know, first of all, I'm not turning 50. Second of all, Adam has a birthday before me.
Also true. But only one of us got the ultimate Irish
peel. Yeah, that's right. You've already trumped me. You know what I'm going to get you? I'm going to take a video of that hawk, and then I'm going to sell it as an NFT, and I'll give you the proceeds.
Hey, Danny Green's selling an NFT of his championship ring. It's a hologram. And if you buy the hologram championship ring, you get to play horse with Danny Green.
Hologram.
Yes, that's what I said. Malik Monk. This is a little Sebastian list.
Up in horsey heaven, here's a thing.
What's on the top of Adam's list?
You trade your legs for angels' wings.
Brought to you by Top of the Hill.
And once we've all said goodbye,
where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
You take a running leap and you learn to fly.
Congratulations to, I don't think he's been on the pod yet, but if he goes to the Olympics, I bet you he will be, Tim Fedorovich.
He has not been on the pod.
He's on the Olympic qualifying roster for USA Baseball. So they start play here pretty soon because, remember, the 2020 Olympics are in 2021, which is kind of confusing. So hopefully they make the field, he makes the team, because that would be cool. I would like to have on another Olympian. Alex Scarborough wrote a story on ESPN.com about football transfers that I thought was pretty good. I recommend you look that up. I thought it was interesting that pretty much everyone agrees there's a ton of tampering going on, but said that oftentimes the main culprit are the players that the other players went to high school with. So if I have Johnny who went to, let's pick a school at random, Apex High. And they know somebody who went to Apex High who's at another school, they'll call them up and be like, hey, man, they're not using you the way they should be. You should come over here to school X, and we'll get you 50 carries a game. Mm. And then that player will go to the coaches and go, hey, I talked to my Apex High School crib guy, and he might be interested. And so that's how it starts a lot of times.
Mm. Yeah, I saw there was a – was this the article that had the Mac Brown quote?
Yes.
Where he was talking about how – and I won't get this quote just right, but he said basically now – you got guys after the game that instead of going right to shake hands with the head coach, they go to the best player on the other team.
Yes. Rusty Sebastian and King Jones both hot on this, and I think you'll understand this more than I do because you know more about it. So really, this could be about anything. That Chris Pratt's band from Parks and Recreation.
Mouse Rat.
Yes. Is releasing a real album this summer. And so... it's on the way. It's going to be the debut album.
Is this real Chris Pratt, Adam, or...
oh, we'll get to that.
A certain fake Chris Pratt.
That's coming up next.
Okay.
The news was posted alongside a video of local Pawnee, Indiana news anchor Purd Hapley.
Purd Hapley, yep.
Sharing the arrival of Mouse Rat's 5,000 Candles in the Wind, Bye Bye Lil Sebastian music video.
Oh. I haven't seen the music video. Maybe I'll go look it up.
It's on the Mouse Rat group official Instagram page.
I'll be there soon.
I can't imagine you don't have that bookmarked. And then speaking of music, I did go back and listen to Pusheisty. Justice Thompson recommended him to us. Now, if I recall...
Pusheisty!
If I recall, Justice Thompson informed us that we could listen to that with our kids if we could find the clean version. I couldn't find the clean version, but I have to imagine that the clean version would just be instrumental.
Just be silence?
I don't think I heard any words that would be on a clean version. Pusheisty's
look,
got...
Adam, if there's one thing Pusheisty's not messing around with, it's clean versions.
Right. Well, Pusheisty's got a track with Lil Baby.
Oh.
And he's got a couple tracks with Lil Durk, which is another Justice Thompson recommendation. And the one with Lil Durk is just absolutely blowing up. So I can't really say that I recommend listening to it, but I can tell you that it does exist. That's called Back in Blood. It's got over 100 million streams, Jones.
I mean, it's pretty incredible that in the span of the last 7 minutes, we went from the ultimate Irish peeler to Pusheisty and Lil Durk.
Yeah. So we mentioned Chris Pratt earlier, and I think there's no better time for us to discuss the fact that we basically met Chris Pratt.
So Adam and I were out and about recently, and we were near a Jurassic Park themed
dinosaur.
And there was this guy who, right when we saw him, Adam goes, "Do you think that guy works here?" And then we looked at him a little bit more, and we realized, no, he did not work there. That he just kind of looked like Chris Pratt, but absolutely dressed exactly like Chris Pratt in the Jurassic Park movies. And so he was just hanging out around this Jurassic Park area just to see if anybody wanted to come and talk to him, take his picture. It's kind of like, it's kind of like when you're in Las Vegas and you get like the F version of the Power Rangers or something. Or that's something I, by the way, I knew nothing about until I saw it for the first time in Las Vegas, where it's like, why is that scary looking Goofy over there signing autographs?
Or like the mouse that kind of looks like Mickey.
Right. He's about 30% of Mickey.
Yeah, I mean, this...
You could convince your kid it's Mickey.
Right.
Maybe.
This Chris Pratt, on the scale of actually looking like Chris Pratt, was maybe like a 7 out of 10. But on the scale of believing he looked like Chris Pratt, yeah. 12 out of 10.
I'm not sure if this is a working for the bubble, but I also don't really know what else it would be. What else... Like, did he think people were going to pay him for walking around and looking kind of like Chris Pratt?
Well, and unfortunately, you walked away before fake Chris Pratt began his photo shoot.
Yeah.
Because he had kind of halfway Rebel Wilson walked up and started taking pictures of him. And they clearly knew each other and were kind of together, but she's not in those movies, I don't think. I haven't seen the new Jurassic Park, so I don't really know. But so he walked over to some Jurassic Park logo type stuff,
yeah,
and a photo shoot commenced.
Yeah, he started looking off into the distance, gazing places.
And luckily, I was able to extremely covertly snap a picture of this.
Yeah,
you probably
would have had to pay $15.
Yeah, the rights fees are going to be incredible. And so we'll have quote-unquote Miles put this out so that you can experience it. And I encourage you to really zoom in on his face, because he is selling that stuff hard.
The camera's already gone here out of the studio after the candid camera moment, but I'm just going to give it to you real fast out of my gaze.
It was just like that.
Yeah. He was like looking up to the right, to the future.
I think that's where the Tyrannosaurus Rex was. It was right up there. He could see it. Mm. And he was like, I respect your ability to survive through these generations, but I must take you down in the name of science.
Yeah.
I looked on the Instagram page on like the tags of where pictures are taken because I thought I might find him, and so far I haven't.
You're like MacGyver.
That's how journalists operate on Instagram.
Anything else, Adam?
No.
Okay, before we get out of here, everybody started freaking out about this ad that ran, right, in the last episode. This is a higher level than us ad. So I don't know what ad it is. I think it changes, apparently, on who you are or what your browsing preferences are. So you may, and maybe now you're going to get an ultimate Irish peeler. I don't know.
If you're lucky.
But just, okay, so everybody get ready. I'm going to place the ad, whatever it may be, it's going to go right here.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, Adam. That way we got everybody prepared. Nobody got jumped out of a dark alleyway with an ad.
I can't believe that my ad told me where to go to claim my $1 million.
My ad talked a lot about Chris Pratt in Jurassic Park. Okay, so we're not back later this week. We hope you have a great long weekend kicking off the summer. Have a safe, fun time. And we've got, like we said, we got some big, big shows coming up. We won't be as frequent through June and July as we normally are not. But when we're there, we're packing a punch. We've got the potties. We have AMA. I think there'll be a game rewatch in there. Maybe a movie. Who knows? But for now, we're going to let Bill Raftery and the RZA and Lil Durk.
Pooh Shiesty.
No, we can't get Pooh Shiesty.
Well, who could?
I mean, we're not trillionaires. Bill Raftery and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Bill Raftery. See you later, big grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Crumley Roberts. Visit CrumleyRoberts.com today to find out how they can stand up for you.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.